Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of What the Hell. But this isn't just another episode. This is an extra. We're calling it a true crime extra. One of the things we've been doing here at KTTV Fox 11 in Los Angeles is looking at some of the big stories that we've done over the last 70 years. It's part of our 70th anniversary celebration. And we're looking at 70 stories. And one of those stories is Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate was a case in which a cult from San Diego believed so much that they were going to go to outer space that they were actually aliens using human bodies to survive on the planet Earth. And they were going to be going back out to from wherever it was that they came, and they left their bodies. They committed suicide, and it was called a mass suicide, and it was a sensational story years ago, and it remains a sensational story decades later. Carol Lieberman is a forensic psychiatrist, and she's in our story, and what we wanted to do with Carol was take a moment and talk about this story, talk about the nuances of it, and at the same time, tell you a little bit about the forensic of creating a news story, because we ran into a lot of interesting situations in this story that we might not run into in other stories, and you'll understand why when we get into that. Carol, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for coming back. And we're going to, for the first part of this podcast, I'm going to play for you little pieces of this story, probably about a minute at a time. And that way you can watch this, you can listen to this, and you can tell us what your thoughts are. So let's start with the very beginning of this story. Also joining us, our managing editor, Pete Wilgorin, and Pete and I will add to the conversation. So let's start with a little bit of our story here.
Your only chance to evacuate is to leave with us.
Chilling words from Marshall Applewhite, the leader of Heaven's Gate.
Planet Earth about to be recycled.
His message is left on videotapes discovered by police when called to the San Diego area mansion. Not far behind, KTTV's reporter Al Nipo.
This is what San Diego sheriff's deputies walked into Wednesday afternoon, a mansion of mass suicide. Investigators released this haunting video of the purple cloth shrouded bodies of 39, mainly middle-aged men and women, who reportedly killed themselves inside this sprawling estate in upscale Rancho Santa Fe.
The news and the images inside were disturbing. But according to the group's website, which is still operating, it was the earth that was disturbed. The way they put it, the human weeds have taken over the garden and disturbed its usefulness beyond repair. Their earthling bodies were described as temporary vessels for their time on Earth, but wouldn't be needed in the kingdom level above human. And making tapes for the public was a way to document their transformation for all mankind.
I hope you have a chance to see it. And I hope, for the sake of the evolutionary level above human, that might be in you, that this might mean something to you and help you know a little bit of the truth.
So, let's talk about that opening part of this story. It's an eye-opener for sure.
Literally. It is mesmerizing. You know, he looks like someone from Star Wars or The Twilight Zone. His eyes are just electric, and they take you in, and they make you believe what he's saying. I mean, it's almost like he was a character in a movie, but he really believes all of that, or so he would have us believe.
And
so
Pete, let me have Pete jump in, because Pete is my colleague, and Pete Wilgorin and I really had some interesting little hurdles to jump on this story.
This is a fascinating one for me. I mean, you know, when we look back at the last 70 years of KTTV, this incident in Southern California is amazing. Marshall Applewhite believed this. His followers were devout, and they believed this. This is not, I don't think, similar to the end of Jonestown. His followers, up until the day this happened, believed in him. And I think what Hal found in his correspondences with this website is that his followers, the couple that are still around perhaps, still believe in this mission.
It's a very, very strange dynamic. And so what do we get about the dynamic in that first piece of the story?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to remember that this was in 1997. The millennium was approaching, and that is why, you know, people were thinking it was going to be the end of the world and the apocalypse, and we were going to die. If we don't leave planet Earth, we're going to die. And so that's how he was able to convince people more easily that that there is this spaceship and we're going to go to this higher human evolutionary plane or higher than humans. So it was in that context that it was so believable.
And also, when you hear some of these followers, for lack of a better term, I think we understand a little bit more about their disposition during all of this. So now let's continue listening to this story that was on KTTV. 39 people, including Marshall Applewhite, were found dead with recipes on them for the drug-laced cocktails they drank.
It said, take the little package of pudding or applesauce and eat a couple of teaspoons to make room to put the medicine in and stir it. And then eat it quickly, drink this vodka mixture, which they apparently had mixed up, and then lay back and rest quietly.
There were 21 women and 18 men. Police said some put bags over their heads to suffocate themselves and speed up death.
And they each carried $5 bills and quarters in their little card with all their identification, whatever, for whatever reason, I have no idea.
I just saw you smile.
They wanted to make sure that if there were washing machines up in where they're going, that they had enough quarters.
But, you know, here's what I think is that these folks were devout. You know, whatever the mission was, they were going to carry it out. What you don't see in the podcast that you see in the piece is that video of the sheriff's department where they walked you through these rooms and you see the people laid out perfectly in the shoes. Perfectly, and the shrouds perfectly, and it's really haunting to look at.
It's haunting to look at because it was choreographed. Very clearly, you listen to the sheriff's deputy talk about take the little bit of applesauce or pudding, mix it up with the vodka, mix it was clearly very, very planned, and they followed through.
Yes, and I think one of the key words in that is recipe, that they, you know, that Marshall left recipes, left instructions, and that's part of what attracted some of these people to this cult, because they came from families where, you know, broken families, they were lost. They didn't have anyone to tell them what to do, and he was a kind of father figure who would tell them what to do, what to eat, how to dress. They were supposed to dress in very drab, loose clothes so they weren't sexually attracted to each other because of his problems from his past and so on.
It almost was like he had this, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I don't want to say anything bad about Mr. Rogers because I was a big fan of Mr. Rogers, but he has that kind of very simple, welcome to my neighborhood, won't you be my friend? You know what I'm saying? He had this very simple way of communicating, and he was hypnotic. And maybe that's true of a lot of these people, that they have this sort of abracadabra over people. They have this ability to get your attention, and you believe them. Jim Jones.
Well, when you see people who made their goodbye videos with Marshall, they're joyous. They're happy about what's about to happen. Or so they appear. I mean, he made them feel joy at what was about to happen. It may have been misguided or not. That's for others to judge.
You and I have talked about this before, Pete, that with the People's Temple in Jonestown, those people had to go kicking and screaming to drink that Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it was a different situation at the end in Jonestown for sure.
And these people seemed much more accommodating.
Well, I think, talk about choreographed, I think part of the reason for these videos, besides carrying on Marshall's legacy, is for the families or people who knew, you know, they were somewhat isolated. But for anyone who wondered what happened to them, it was to sort of reassure them that they're going to a better place.
And to them, that better place was where they came from, not some place they were going to they didn't know anything about.
So let me ask you, Hal, as we worked on this piece and now this podcast, this website for Heaven's Gate is still operational. It looks a little bit like it's back in the 1990s still. It's very, you know, it's a primitive website, but it's carrying the message. So Hal reached out to folks on that website. You know, is there anyone still around? Would someone want to speak with us? And what you found was pretty startling.
Well, I thought it was pretty revealing. I mean, first of all, we found an interview online in a blog that the person who purportedly is maintaining the website said that there were 8 people left from Heaven's Gate when all this happened. They were supposed to continue the communications through the website, and 4 of them are still left today. When we contacted them, because we wanted to reach out to all aspects of the story and we wanted to find out if there were still followers, we were met with an email that said, we don't do interviews except by email. And I said, okay, well, let me give you some questions. And the questions, Pete and I put together a list of questions, and they included things like what, Pete?
Well, you know, I'm really fascinated by it. I'm not casting judgment one way or another. I wanted to know, what would you want the people to know about Heaven's Gate? People have called the organization a cult. What would you say about that? For the families of those in Heaven's Gate, the 39 people, for the families left behind, what would your message to them be? You know, and then I threw in another question myself here. So much has been written about Heaven's Gate. Tell us something you think people would be surprised to hear. Because I think the first written reaction you got back from those folks is more of a, this has all been documented. People always, you know, write sort of a negative narration of what they think the events were. I'm really curious. If there are survivors out there, it sounds like there may be a couple. Tell us, from your perspective, just talk to us.
Yeah, I mean, we really are open-minded to want to hear what they have to say. I added a bunch of other questions because fundamentally I didn't even know who we were talking to. So I asked, you know, am I talking to one person or two? Can you identify yourself so I can have a better understanding who I'm speaking with? Are you the webmaster? Are you a man? Are you a woman? How old are you? How many members are there today? Why were you not among the other 39? Mm-hmm. Where do you actually receive your direction? How do you get your instructions? Where do you believe the San Diego 39 are now? All these are obvious questions. Nothing difficult. What's your future? Are new people joining the organization? Obviously, if they wanted to keep the information out there and have a website, they wanted to continue to recruit, one would think. We obviously have no way of knowing. What is your message to the public? What can you tell us about the next level and its role today and in the future? Do you have regrets about not leaving with the San Diego 39? Do you think about them? Now, any and all of those questions don't require complicated or overly revealing responses. A yes or a no might have even been acceptable on some of those things. But what we got back instead was a note saying to us that they felt that some of the questions, the ones that Pete mentioned particularly, have been used by others in a sensational way in the past, and they didn't want to follow through. But they did answer one question, and that was, they said, there are no members. And that left me completely puzzled because, obviously, at least from the other blog interview that was done and the fact that somebody is maintaining that website, the somebody who I was communicating with, one would think that they are somehow engaged in the organization.
Well, I mean, just think about that. 20 years later, someone's maintaining this website. Someone is paying the bill to keep this website up and running. And where it talks very eloquently about the mission that they had on that day and why what they did was done. And 20-plus years later, that information is online, and someone is keeping that out there because they want to keep this legacy of these 39 people alive.
It's a mystery wrapped up in an enigma, right?
I mean, you know, I guess theoretically it could be a family member of one of the members of his group, but it just seems to not make any sense because if there are no members, then who am I talking to? You know, who just wrote back to me?
And that left us with all kinds of questions and puzzled and all of the things that you would expect when you ask somebody something being encouraged to do an email interview because that's sort of how I took it, and then getting no answers and basically walking into a big stop sign. And I just sort of wonder what's going on with this group, because somebody's behind that website. It's up there. It's called Heaven's Gate, and it's just as big as day.
Yes, you know, it's, I mean, you know, you could think, well, did he leave a legacy? Did he leave a certain amount of money that would keep that website up there in perpetuity? But then no one would have answered you back if that was just a website right. where you couldn't communicate.
It's strange. It's very strange, and that's why we wanted to actually talk a little bit about this on the podcast, because we have questions, and we wondered, and we want to know. And if there's anybody, we'd like to talk to them, and we'd like to meet them, and we'd like to find out what they're thinking now 20 years later.
Well, and I think you hit on a very interesting topic here. The folks who are part of this organization or whoever's left behind have kept this website up and running because they would like that word still out there for people to see. This video, the video archive of the Sheriff's Department and these other videos that the folks left behind is out there for history. And I know, Hal, when you spoke with Dr. Lieberman for the story on TV, you asked her about the value of having that video record still out there. You know, why is it important for people to be able to look back at this? And, you know, I wonder if Dr. Lieberman could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I take it as a warning sign. Hopefully people will see that as a warning sign to not fall prey to a man like Marshall Applewhite, who I say was most likely suffering from either schizophrenia or paranoid schizophrenia or manic depressive illness, and you know, had a lot of problems in his background. That's the thing. People like this, generally, who are these leaders, generally take things from their own background, consciously or unconsciously, and they turn it into a doctrine that they try to get others to believe. So, for example, Marshall had problems with. He was a college music teacher, and he was fired because he was pursuing male students for his sexual gratification. And that was part of why he wanted people to wear loose clothing. In fact, he and six other of his followers got castrated in Mexico, because that was the idea. Really what it was his way of not trying to protect himself from not following through on his sexual impulses. So all of the, really basically it's these people bring their psychopathology from childhood and from the previous part of their life to bear on their philosophy that they try to get other people to buy into. You know, one other thought I had in terms of who could be on the other end of this is maybe it's a family member or friend, and they want to believe that their loved one didn't die in vain. So they are trying to convince themselves, convince the rest of the world that this was a legitimate thing.
We don't know a lot about what Marshall Applewhite was thinking when he was saying these things. We assume he believed every word of it. We believe, by looking at his actions, that he really thought he too was going off to some Hale Bob Comet spaceship. But the thing is, if he was leading like a Pied Piper his flock to slaughter, is he of a mind, you're a psychiatrist, is he of a mind to be saying, I know what I'm doing. I don't believe what I'm saying, but I know what I'm doing.
I think there was part of him that realized what he was saying wasn't necessarily the truth. And I think it's so interesting that, you know, it was years before that his partner in crime, Bonnie Nettles, had died from cancer. And up till that point, he told people that the only way you could die would be if you went up in a spaceship. I mean, the only valid way to die would be if you went up in a spaceship and went to this higher level. But when she died without committing suicide, then he had to reframe all of that. And I think he was thinking for himself. He was around 65 when this happened, and she had died from cancer, and that really had an impact on him. And I think he was afraid that he was going to die before he proved to the world that what he was saying about this alien world and this higher level was true. So, like, for example, if he died and left his followers there, there would have been no way for him to prove that you should commit suicide and then you're going to be taken up by this spaceship. I think he felt that the end of his life was coming, and he had promised them this big finale. He needed to provide a big finale after they followed him for all these years.
Now, as our big finale, we will play the end of the story at the end of this podcast. But, Pete, let's sort of pick up the conversation here with... You and I have done a lot of stories together, and we hit some really interesting roadblocks on this one that I haven't really run into in other stories.
Well, you're dealing with an organization that there may or may not be people still out there. They, you know, not too keen on having their videos shown, although they're online. And I think they, you know, whoever's out there on the other side of that website definitely feels that history maybe has not been kind to the image of Heaven's Gate. And they certainly have their reason for believing that. You and I come into it. I come into it from the perspective that, you know, when we're looking at the last 70 years in Los Angeles, which is how we started picking some of these stories to focus on, this is a fascinating one. And I just want to talk about it. And if there's people still out there that want to talk about it, I would love to hear what they have to say about it. You know, I really feel for the families of the 39 folks who were left behind. You know, these are lives that... Who knows where these people would have ended up? And, you know, I look at it with empathy for the families of those people left behind, too.
Yes, you have to. You know, we talk about true crime. What is it that fascinates us about true crime and about things like this Heaven's Gate story?
Well... We try to, it's like a mystery story. It's like you try to figure out the ending, or you try to figure out why people did what they did, and you keep looking for some kind of answer to it. You know, or true crime where people, you want to know who the killer is.
But we know this story, and we know how it ends, and there's not an alternative ending.
Here's what's so interesting, and I think Dr. Lieberman just hit it. It would have been far easier for you to put this story together had someone not answered you. Now someone did answer you. You know there's someone on the other end there who's looking after this website, who's looking after the legacy of this group. Who is that person? And why are they doing this? And wouldn't you love to talk to them?
I would love to talk to them. If you could, Carol, what would you ask them?
Oh, I would just like to put Marshall Applewhite on my couch and cure all the things that ailed him before he got all these people to follow him into death.
You know, I want to – every person in this group had a fake name. Hmm. They had fake names because they were trying to disassociate their present with their past. But when you go online and, you know, there's a lot of material out there, you find out that – the people whose bodies were discovered by law enforcement in San Diego County had names like Dana and Robert and Raymond and LaDonna and Margaret and Cheryl and Michael and Suzanne and John and Betty and Erica and Lee and Jacqueline and Jeffrey and Gail and Joel. And the list goes on. They're real people with real names who somehow believed in something that most of us would say is completely unreal.
I think the key to that is something that the daughter of Bonnie Nettles said, which is so telling. She said that she and her mother, when she was a little girl, she and her mother used to look up at the sky for spaceships because they felt like misfits in this life. They felt like they didn't belong to this world, and they were hoping for a spaceship to take them away and bring them to a world where they did fit in. That's the whole key. All of these people were misfits. They were unhappy with their life, and they wanted to go to, they wanted to believe in and to go to this other place where they would fit in and their life would be much better.
Well, and I think you hit on a really interesting point in the piece, Dr. Lieberman. When you think about the late 90s, and, you know, it's now a whole generation has passed since then, but for folks who were there, you know, Y2K was a legitimate thing. We talked about Y2K and what would happen at the turn of the millennium. It stoked up a lot of fears in people. You know, from a business perspective, people didn't know what would happen with computers. There were concerns about flying on New Year's that year. Do you remember? They weren't sure how airplanes would react when clocks and computers switched over. There was a lot of fear and uncertainty around. And I think that time in history was a really interesting time for this all to happen. And you pinged on that in Hal's piece, and it's important to remember.
Well, I think a couple of things. One, as we sort of wrap this up, we'll put the piece actually in the copy on this podcast so that there's a link so you're able to see the piece. Number two, an invitation to whoever's behind this website. Come talk to us. Tell us what the hell you want to tell us. Whatever the hell you want to tell us. Because we want to hear from you. We want you to have your opportunity to speak out. The people behind this website that are keeping Heaven's Gate, at least online, alive. Final thoughts, Carol, Pete?
I think it's an important story to look back on and remember. And, as many of the pieces are in this project we've seen, it's important to document pieces of history like this.
Carol?
Yes, absolutely, so that we don't have a repetition of it. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Marshall Applewhite is behind it. Maybe the computer is reaching up to his higher level, and he's the one behind the website. I am only kidding, but trying to add it.
I know you are, but remember, we don't want to be too light here. People died.
Well, that's
and this
right.
was serious.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, in some ways, it just seems so preposterous. I guess, as a psychiatrist, the thing that touches me the most is how upsetting it is that he didn't get treatment earlier in his life and that he foisted his psychopathology onto all these other people.
The followers believe their futures were tied to the Hale-Bopp comet that orbits Earth every 2,000 years. It was on its way, and they really believed that there was a spacecraft hiding in its tail to take them to a place they had only heard about in their classes.
See, it says Heaven's Gate away team, and that's exactly what that means to us.
It was a UFO that was supposed to come and sweep them up to a better existence, which is why the followers, who also spoke publicly on tape, said things like this about leaving Earth in what were their exit statements.
I've been looking for this for so long. There's just no way of describing how great it's been, how much we're looking forward to what's ahead for us now.
Next Level is very generous and fair.
I hope that it serves as a warning to people to not fall victim to another Marshall Applewhite.
So to us, it would be suicide to not leave.
Thanks for joining us. What the Hal, another episode. This one, a true crime edition. And we'll try to do more of these on this podcast. And also, if you haven't already, please subscribe. You can do that through any of the places where you normally get your podcast. And until next time, see you later.